This feels like a mammoth hill to climb for some reason.
Kilimanjaro.
Just really looking for a pun.
You know, I climbed Kilimanjaro.
You've told me twice today, actually. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah. I'm not saying I doubt you.
I'm going to post it to our Instagram.
But I am curious, like, how much of it you climbed.
Well, I did climb all of it.
And how much of it?
I walked all the way down to the town of Moshi, Tanzania.
Moshi?
Yeah.
Moshi, Moshi. Japan, Tanzania, my new favorite place.
Welcome.
Come
to Dear Wamo.
We're technically back from Italy, so you're welcome and everything.
I can't wait for the recap episode of Italy.
Yeah,
cannot wait to hear what we've got to say.
I can't wait to hear my own voice.
I cannot wait.
You know, because, you know, as you all know, it's no secret, you know, behind the scenes that, you know, we record things preemptively. So, of course, like, for us right now, Italy hasn't happened yet, but when this comes out, Italy will have happened. So it's just exciting to think, like, who are we gonna be in the future? Like, yeah. Are we gonna be Italian? Are we gonna be like, ciao, God. Bella bella?
I can just, do you follow that ragazzi. Account of that girl who's like American girl who just came back from Portugal?
Her name's Laura Ramon.
I don't know, but it's so fucking funny.
Rumi Nami Numino. She's brilliant.
Anyways, if you've never heard Dear Wamo before, this is our short form episode
where we respond to all of your thoughts, questions,
feelings,
queries,
ideas, and just general information. So without further ado, let's read. The first. This is so annoying. Oh my God, this is making my mind.
I'm just watching your mouth and trying to predict what you're going to say.
I love that. Well, you have our Dear Wamos this week.
I do.
Should we kick it off or you
can? No, I think I'm fine. Let's just do this. Let's just live in this sort of purgatory for all times. Yeah. No, I do have, you are correct. We're going to kick it off right now with a mammoth email we got.
Yeah.
And I say mammoth, and I don't want you to think I'm being disparaging to the length of this email, but it's very long. Okay, here we go. Firstly, I love the show. I've been listening since episode one. I used to listen to you guys daily, but lately I find myself playing catch up all the time because my commutes are shorter. So I binge listen when I'm on a particularly long train ride. I've been living in Europe for almost 3 years. I'm originally from Philly. I guess that's Philadelphia, right? And it's cute, but I'm preparing to move back to the States. Naturally, I'm in the process of looking for a house in Texas. I don't know if that's naturally, right? If you're from Philadelphia, whatever. Because I don't want to rent and because I'm in a position to purchase. Hell, why not? I'm familiar with Central Texas because I lived in a small area a few towns away from the city and I fell in love with Houston. I just knew that Texas felt like home and I told myself if I moved back to the States, it was always going to be Texas. Deeply in the process of looking for the perfect home, I find myself in an awkward position. I fell in love with a beautiful house in a neighborhood that visually looks like they are gentrifying the neighborhood. I know how this story ends. Eventually, this will push out all the people, mostly black and poor people of color, out of the neighborhood by introducing more new shops, tons of new construction homes, and suddenly your rent is raised and the place that you grew up suddenly feels like somewhere else. Since it's not my city, I am not really familiar with all the different communities and neighborhoods. I started doing my research on the neighborhood and much to my disappointment, my realtor described it as less than savory, but mentioned it's on the rise. I always question these things when people describe a neighborhood because most of the time when people describe the hood, I often ask, is it ghetto or do black people just live there? At the same time, I'm very cautious of living in a decent neighborhood because I am gay out loud, honey. Safety is probably number two, if not number three, most important thing, only second to the house itself. Sidebar, I'm not too worried about safety because I grew up in a rough neighborhood and it generally doesn't scare me in the way that it might scare most people. Anyway, the last thing I want to do is to have to deal with discrimination or acts of violence to me or anyone that may come to visit me because after all, this is going to be my primary residence and I want to feel comfortable in my own home. Additionally, I like these homes because among just being a nice house in my price range, it is a predominantly black neighborhood. This is important because I don't want to deal with white women who question if I belong in this neighborhood because Barbara knows everyone who lives around here or whatever. And now I'm breaking out the folding chair and recording people in my Facebook or some shit. So, with all that being said, finally, my questions are, would I be part of the problem by moving into this neighborhood and by proxy contributing to a long-standing community and its members being erased and or pushed out? Am I part of the epidemic of people who come to a city and make snap decisions about a neighborhood based off something someone said once? Do I let what may be my dream house fade away? Is it selfish of me to even have this debate when it's just a house? Lastly, if they are doing it anyway, would it in fact be a good thing that I'm saying, fuck you to the system, we can afford your housing, and continue to keep the culture of people of color and people who are less financially free there in the neighborhood? Please do share what you guys would do if in a similar position. I feel like maybe it's good to note this person is also a person of color, if that wasn't clear. It's a very societal thing. It might be hard for us to really give you the right advice. Is there anything come
being
to your mind?
Being from Texas, I know exactly about this urban sprawl and being pushed out. You know, so many people are moving to Texas, and it is really tough. It is really tough because if you can afford a house, obviously you want to get the best house.
Yeah.
For what you can afford. That's not always in the super rich areas, of course. Like we, especially first-time home buyers, you want to get the best deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very privileged of us as maybe white people to not have to feel... to be honest with you, my presence in the community, I don't necessarily always consider. I live in a pretty rich area now. I never really thought about how I related to that environment. But I know specifically Austin had a really interesting problem with this because central Austin, downtown is encapsulated by these two highways, MoPac and 35. To the west of MoPac was the absolute richest area in Austin called Westlake.
Mm.
And east of 35 was the black and Latino area. And it was split. The segregation was split
by a highway.
Mm-hmm. And everyone east of the highway was effectively poor people of color.
Mm.
And there's been a lot of growth pushing east. Now, when I first moved to Austin 15 years ago, it was nobody was going east, especially white people. And it was very much a sort of sacred land for people who had been there forever in East Austin. Now, I think I had moved just east into East Austin. Well, I moved when a lot of people were being pushed, you know, into the places that you could afford in East Austin. And now it's certainly part of this gentrification narrative. It is pushing people further out. And I mean, even the hipster sort of artists are even going way further east into East Austin. But I can't, that was the first time that gentrification really was present to me, where I noticed like kind of how city planning and like honestly racism go hand in hand sometimes. I think it's so interesting with this question because these are things that I am privileged enough to not necessarily have to think about. And so I'd be curious to hear kind of what your response to this. I mean, in cities like Houston and Austin and Dallas, you need a car to get everywhere. It's not like a blended society, you know? And I think that really segregates people in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I would say, I mean, I feel like this problem, of course, is not unique to America, but I hear about it a lot in sort of like American-centric news, because the divide between white people and people of color is really big. And you see this with a, I mean, you see this conversation come up in a lot of stuff, not just gentrification, but also like gerrymandering and all sorts of things like that, you know? What I would say about this, a couple of things, the idea of like going into someone else's neighborhood, like, of course, a neighborhood isn't like a static thing. Like it's always changing anyway, whether gentrification happens or not.
There's
always going to be new residents and old residents. Like that is just normal. Like that will never stop. Even if gentrification doesn't come to your town, there will still be new residents there. I would say it depends on a couple of things. Like if this is a neighborhood where like if the current pricing of the homes there is like how much the community are already paying for and that's what you can afford, aren't you on the same level as them?
100%.
Right? Number one. Number two, from what you've described, this is a neighborhood that's predominantly Black and people of color. And you, we know you to be from this message that you are also a person of color. And so it would be different, I think, if you were moving into this neighborhood as a white person and you could like just benefit from like the cheap housing. But it's like, maybe you feel, you know, as you've said, like you probably feel comfortable in this neighborhood because you don't have to walk around being so worried for your safety. Like these are people that you can connect with and feel safe around. And I wouldn't underestimate that. Like, I don't think that's, when we're talking about the gentrification conversation, I don't think a person of color moving into a neighborhood that's also where also Black people and people of color live because they feel safe, I feel like that's just like two different conversations. Like you deserve to live in a place where you feel safe.
Yeah, of course.
And so I would say also to make the argument, if things are at risk of, you know, if the gentrification is a risk, I would also say that people like you are a benefit to the neighborhood because it seems like you're somebody who's actively thinking about it. And if you're actually thinking about it and you care about it, it means probably that you're more likely to take action. So maybe you're more likely to actually get to know the community and make friends with these people and help them with the things that they need. So maybe your presence is a good thing. If you have any sort of like movement or power or whatever it is, you know, maybe you're actually going to be a positive force in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
So I think that the fact that you're even asking the question is a really positive thing. It's like often I think in my head, like the people who actively don't want children are often the ones I think, if someone has to have children, I wish it were you. Because they're often the ones who are like really conscientious about like the really important stuff. And then they've made a decision like, I don't want to have a child because it means this, that, and the other. That's not to say that all people have children are terrible, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying that. But do you see what I mean? It's like you've already been considering the question. So I think that if you actually move into this neighborhood with all of that in your heart and then you act on it, you know, you actually try and become part of the community and get to know the community and, you know, and respect this community and like add value to the community, that's really positive. I wouldn't underestimate that. I mean, I don't know how much you have power to like stop gentrification. Like, I don't know how you could do that, but
the reality is, like, I think again, in the context of Texas, like those cities are like, first of all, more and more people are moving into the cities and they're not going vertical. Oftentimes they're going horizontal. So, you know, it allows us to reconsider what the fabric of a neighborhood is. How do you retain local culture? I know for East Austin, I was a part of a lot of the kind of neighborhood associations. And so much of that conversation was, well, how do we retain culture? How do we keep prices low? How do we respect our surroundings while still knowing fully that people are just going to continue to move into the city? And a lot of people want to be in East Austin right now. You know, so I think like not all of the growth has to be a bad thing. I remember when growing up, when we were going to South Congress, there was this food truck park that was in the middle of this main street in South Congress that everyone loved. And when they said they were going to take out this food truck park and put in a hotel, initially that was, everybody was so up in arms about this food truck park being ripped out to put a hotel in. Mm. Now, if you were to go to South Congress, this hotel is like the cornerstone of a lot of culture that happens on that street. They do such a good job of matching the temperature of that neighborhood and they do a lot to contribute to it. And actually, it creates new areas. Sometimes when culture is pushed out, it creates new pockets and it continues to splinter. And I think that's actually, again, maybe this is coming from a place of privilege, but I like to grow with the city and see kind of how, you know, I can have a voice and a perspective and reflect culture and contribute to culture. Yes, I'm a white man, but I think like so many cities are doing that right. They're doing it really respectfully, the growth aspect of it. And so I would say also, yeah, I think if you can afford that neighborhood and you are a perfect candidate if you respect your surroundings. And I think regardless of what type of person you are, that's what we should aim to be, good citizens of a location. Yeah. And I think like respecting that culture is so different for some people. Of course, it's like wanting to keep prices down, wanting to retain some of the legacy culture. But, you know, I think that we need to just be aware that a city is going to continue to grow. More and more people are moving into these cities. And it's important to understand that that's going to continue to happen too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think also it's good to recognize that like the big problem here, of course, is essentially it's capitalism is like the main issue.
Yeah.
And that's a sort of big problem to fight. Like this is not just a problem that's happening there.
No.
Like, it's global. It's like, you know, for all of us, you know, you have to be earning so much fucking money just to afford a fucking place. Like rent here, for example, in Stockholm is like absolutely fucking ridiculous. You know, go somewhere like London, it's fucking ridiculous. New York, LA, San Francisco, Paris, Berlin, even, you know, starting to get more expensive. Like it's just, I was having a conversation with a person, with someone else actually the other day about this, just sort of like, where is the ceiling? Like when, like, because it's all just based off greed. It's all based off, you know, the richest people just wanting to make more and more and more and more money and to hoard all of the fucking wealth and make us spend more and more of our wages on something that should just be a basic necessity. Like all of us deserve have a place to live. And like, we don't all have to live in like complete luxury, but we deserve to live comfortably. Like that's a human right. I think, you know, you shouldn't have to live somewhere like with fucking black mold if you're poor. I think everybody gets to live comfortably. The situation is quite dire. I really don't know when that's going to end. It's so fucking funny when you listen to like boomers, for example, complain about the new generations and about how hard they had it. I'm like, honey, you
did. Like, I've seen so many reels that have debunked that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you can see with inflation and stuff, like it's just not true. Like, yes, we earn more money now, but we spend way much more money. We spend way much more of our wage on our home, whether we buy one or rent one. It's the same. Like we have to spend so much fucking money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I would say in your particular case, bearing in mind that both of us maybe don't know too much about about gentrification and all these things. And like, maybe you know more because you're from Texas, but it sounds like from what you're writing, it's like, it's something that you're conscious of and you're a person of color moving into a neighborhood that's predominantly black people of color. And safety is something that you also deserve, especially like, I mean, I haven't lived in the States, but just from reading the fucking news, like dangerous, like America feels dangerous, especially if you're a person of color. And so it's my understanding. And so, I understand if safety is also a priority for you and you deserve to feel safe. So if this is a house that you really like, it's in your budget, it's in a neighborhood that you like with like a community that looks good to you, you feel safe there. Like, I mean,
yeah,
checks all the boxes. So yeah. And I think you mentioned something about neighborhood associations. Like if that's something you can get into and see what people care
get
about.
Get plugged into an environment. Yeah. So many people don't, but I think it's so important to do your duty. If you love the neighborhood and you want to be a part of that growth and you want to contribute to society, that's one way to absolutely do it.
Yeah. So thank you for your question.
Oftentimes when I post some funny meme or I post a photo or something, people feel very comfortable telling me how it relates to them. Okay. So I posted this photo of Billy, like with his hands into a rock.
Yeah. I thought it was very playful of him.
It's so funny because it's so not really Billy to do that. And I thought it was hysterical.
I think you're rubbing off on him.
I think so too. I think he's like loosening up a little bit. So one listener wrote in and goes, "Hey guys, I need you to know this. One of my worst sexual experiences ever was holding hands with another dude in someone's ass. I swear I thought I was holding his heart for a second."
Was that actually on our Awatmo page?
No, I posted it on my personal.
Oh, yeah, because I read that and I wanted to respond and I didn't because I was busy. But I, that's so funny to me.
Like, that's the kind of caliber of messages I love to get.
But for
and
me,
also, that is so viscerally relatable.
But that's what's so interesting is that for
as a gay man,
like for one person, that's like a terrible sexual experience for them. And for me, like I've done that like a couple of times. Yeah. It's been like an amazing experience for
and
me.
And oftentimes when they, you know, in that situation, your heart is beating very fast.
Yeah,
it's a very like kind of feels like a high risk situation.
You can also feel like when you're inside, when your hand is inside someone, like you can feel their heart beating. Of course, like the heart is very high up and there's a lot of organs in the way. So like you don't get that far where you could actually like touch their heart or anything. And there is literally like a rib cage around it. But I understand, like, you know,
I understand.
The blood is all like moving around and you can sort of feel stuff going on and blah, blah, blah. So I get it. And if you're not used to fisting, like if that's like the second time you fisted someone, then that could be very trippy for you.
Right. But what was so funny for me is the idea of holding hands in someone's ass.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
It's very like ring around the rosy.
Yeah.
But in an asshole.
Is that when Billy asks for your hand in marriage, is it going to be inside someone's butthole?
Yeah.
Take this guy's hand in my ass.
But I just thought that was so funny that prompted something so silly.
Yeah.
But also that's gay culture in a nutshell, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like it's romantic and filth at the same time.
Do you know, I got, talking of like the listeners sending us messages. Someone sent me a message the other day that actually made me really laugh. Here, how about a segment where you retell myths and legends, but with gay plot lines? And they wrote Saint George, and then they wrote Saint George and the Dragon Dildo. I thought that was kind of brilliant.
I think that's really. I think we should be doing more of that. To be honest.
Saint George and the Dragon Dildo.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That was actually Shane who messaged me.
Also,
shout out to Shane.
But also, like, it's so in right now to fist.
It's so in. Everyone's doing it.
I feel like all we talk about is fist.
If you're not doing it, you're not.
Remember when we notoriously went to that Spotify party that we were invited to?
Spotifest. Spotifest.
Spotifest. No. That party that was at the office.
Yeah.
And,
I've been to a couple.
And they came up to say, like, we want to feature you on our reels.
Oh, my God.
We want to feature on our reels. And we were like, oh, my God, we're going to make it. We're going to be on the Spotify
because
official.
They knew that we had a podcast. And they said, like, we're going to make these reels. And we're going to ask you some questions. And they sat
You're
us
You're
going to
be on the Spotify official Instagram.
And it turned... It turned into fisting so fast.
like instantly. And these poor interns had no idea what they were getting
One of them was
into.
Like...
And it never saw the light of day.
No, one of them... They were like the TikTok team, basically. And like one is like in charge of this and that or whatever. And they all thought we were very funny. Like they were pissing their pants. But
sometimes we go too far for the sake of humor. And I think we really need to understand our audience. Well, anyways, thank you for telling us that romantic story of holding someone's hand in your ass.
Yeah. Fists unite against the patriarchy.
guys and gals and theys and thems, thank you for listening to Dear Wattmo. That was an emotional roller coaster.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit. It was serious. It was laughable. It was all the things. Also, we're exhausted. We're tired. We're ready to close this out.
Even though we're still in the episode, I'm not sure I can remember anything I just said.
I black out every single fucking time. Every time, I have no idea. I have no idea.
And it's so funny when people message me and they often don't actually they don't tell me that it's about the podcast. They just respond. To something I said, but it might be they listened to an episode from 3, 4, 5 weeks ago.
I have no idea.
And they just write a random line, and I'm like, why would you say that to me? I don't understand what you're talking about. And they're like, this is literally what you said on your podcast. I'm like, oh, I don't remember saying that. Oh, but that sounds really intelligent. Wow. Oh, okay, cool. I did say that. Interesting. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally black out.
Yeah. So what we're saying is,
you're welcome.
Stop.
I got you to say it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening. We need to go to bed.
Bye.
Hey, do you have a hilarious story you've been dying to share with us?
Or maybe you have a super sexy question you need answered.
We definitely want to hear it.
You can send us messages anonymously through our link tree on Instagram at awatmapod. That's AWATMOPOD. And while you're there, why don't you click that follow button?
Are We About to Make Out is recorded and produced in Stockholm, Sweden. Follow Are We About to Make Out for free wherever you listen to podcasts. If you listen on Spotify, make sure to also click the bell next to the follow button to get notifications for new episodes. And while you're there, hey, why don't you rate us 5 stars?
Our original music is designed and mixed by Gabriel Munte. Executive producers are, of course, us, Joshua Woods, and Spencer Huddleston. And we couldn't do this show without the help of our wonderful production manager, Elle Barron.
We will see you next week for a full episode of Are We About to Make Out? So we'll see you next week.
Hiya!